Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Well, the Suns beat the Lakers last night, evening the series at two games apiece and taking back home court advantage. But the biggest concern for LA is Anthony Davis, who was already dealing with a sprained left knee. With 48 seconds left in the first half, AD missed a layup, landed awkwardly, and was ruled out for the rest of the game with a strained groin. And after the game, LeBron said this: "These shoulders were built for a reason. If it takes me putting some more on top of them, so be it. Win, lose, or draw, I am ready for the challenge." Ooh, how about that quote? Fox Sports NBA analyst Chris Broussard joins us. Chris, can LeBron win this series without AD and those shoulders of his?
I like LeBron's statement. I like his attitude, but those shoulders have been through 18 regular seasons, more playoff games than any player in NBA history, and they're 36 years old. So I say no. It's just too much to ask of LeBron at this stage in his career. We saw the two games the Lakers have won in this series. Anthony Davis was phenomenal. 34 points, 11 rebounds in both games. LeBron, without a second star, has not beaten a team this good since 2007. When he beat Detroit, the Bad Boys, the remix, I called him, with Rasheed Wallace, Chauncey Billups, and all those guys, to get to the finals against San Antonio. He was 22 years old. But since then, LeBron's typically had a second superstar with him. And when he hasn't, 2 years ago in L.A., they didn't even make the playoffs. And he was injured, obviously, but came back. They were 8-13 when he came back. This season, in February and March, when AD got hurt, before LeBron got injured, they were just 7-7. So it's just asking a lot of LeBron against this team. Some first-round opponents you beat, but this is an odd year where you're facing the second-best team in the West as far as record. And if you look at the top four players without AD, three of them are on Phoenix: Booker, Ayton, and Chris Paul, now that he seems to be getting back to health. So I think it's too much to ask. Yesterday, LeBron's the only Laker to score more than 12 points. He's the only starter with a positive plus minus. Here's what I'll give them. The one chance they have of beating Phoenix without AD is that they have to go back to the way LeBron's played most of his career, where he's the system. Like this year, he's been fitting in more. He's been a part of the system. He's off the ball more. There's a lot of possessions. He doesn't touch the ball. He's shooting more jump shots. For them to have a chance, he has to go back to dominating the ball, bringing the ball up court, and creating opportunities for himself and his teammates. When he's the system, it can sometimes be a challenge when he's got a second superstar like AD, Kyrie, or Dwayne Wade. But when he's the system, it's the best way for them to play when he's surrounded by role players. And that's why he did it in Cleveland, and he made them a great team, even though they couldn't win the championship before he went to Miami. And he did it in 2015. Remember, that's why they gave Golden State a good series and took them to six games without Kevin Love and Kyrie, because LeBron was controlling tempo, controlling everything. I don't know if he can do it for 40 minutes at age 36 anymore. But that's the only chance they have of beating Phoenix without Anthony Davis.
I agree. But the thing was that when he was in Cleveland, they understood their roles. Nobody thought they should have been an all-star. Nobody was trying to get max dollars. So you telling me Schroeder's going to be okay with that? Kyle Kuzma thinks he's Brandon Ingram or Julius Randle. He sees the young talent. Everybody that started with the Lakers have made an all-star. You look at D'Angelo Russell. He's been an all-star. Brandon Ingram, he's been an all-star. Julius Randle, he's been an all-star. Two of the three has won most improved player. Jordan Clarkson just won sixth man of the year. So how do you think Kuzma sees himself? I can do that. And what's he do? He come in there and F it up every time he get in the ball game. I already know when he come in there, he on some bull jive.
Not every time.
Yeah, just about every time. More times than not, he muck it up, Skip. You know it. You love it, too. The thing is, he's going to have to ice those shoulders up, and I agree with you. And the problem is this is what he's running to his entire career, Chris, is that when he goes to the bench, what do they do when he goes to the bench? Who can initiate the offense consistently without turning it over? Okay, they might make one good pass, but then they have two turnovers to cancel that out. Schroeder played unbelievable game three. He MIA in game four. So for me, he's just going to have to go back and I just hope they can just hold on. I don't think AD's coming back. Even if they get past this round, I'm not pitching AD come back and skip it. I used to tell you this all the time. You limp into the season, you limp out of it. You limp into the playoffs, you limp out of it. And that's what happened with AD. So I don't envision him coming back, but LeBron is going to have to end up getting up probably 17, 18 shots in the first half. He might need to be somewhere around 35 shots for a ball game and be efficient in order for them to have a chance. But I wouldn't doubt it. If I had, I got a little money, I'm going to roll with it.
Would you?
I'm rolling with it, yeah.
Huh. Phoenix by 4.5 tomorrow night.
Give me the points. I take
like
it right
it?
Now.
Mm.
I like it.
Mm.
Two cases right now.
I'm not doing it. I told you, I expect LeBron to play huge, to have broad shoulders tomorrow
night. We're
icing
them shoulders as we speak, Chris, so we can hold up on Atlas. LeBron Atlas James, they call it.
Okay. My turn. Here's the irony of what you two just said. Would you believe, this got overlooked, that the GOAT, LeBron James, GOAT James, as I hear again and again and again and again and again from across the table, GOAT James actually had his scapegoat at halftime yesterday, but the scapegoat got hurt. And that was AD. He was 2 of 9 in the first half and 0 of 3 from 3 and scored a grand total of 6 points with 4 rebounds. And I know what was about to happen this morning on this show. You would have come in and been all over AD. Where were you? You disappeared again.
Oh, game one.
Right?
You saw him in game one. You saw him in game
That's
two.
That's legitimate, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
He's
By
a
the
superstar.
Way, speaking of game one, in the fourth quarter of game one at Phoenix, with Chris Paul playing or trying to play with one arm, LeBron went 1 of 4 from the field, 1 of 4 from 3, and 1 of 4 from the free throw line. It's just not good enough.
No.
And that was a shameful loss to start with. And so that's what put them in the hole that they're in right now. So back to Chris Broussard. LeBron James right now, just for the big picture, over the four games, is shooting 9 of 28 from 3. That's 32%, and that's not good enough, and that's too many. From the free throw line, your man LeBron James is 10 of 17 over the four games. Well, that's 59%, which isn't good enough, but the crucial point here is, the crucial number is the 17. He's attempted only 17 free throws in four games. That's barely over 4 a game. And for his playoff life, for his playoff career, he's averaged 9 free throws a game. He is not getting to the free throw line. I believe it's because he's getting more and more afraid of himself at the free throw line, but they cannot keep him from the basket. So tomorrow night, and I appreciate Chris bringing it up, I brought it up earlier in the show, I want to see 2015 Finals LeBron. That was the most spectacular 3 games of his career. And again, Kyrie got hurt at overtime of game one, and Kevin Love was already gone.
Yep.
So he has to play with 2 hands tied behind his back. He didn't have either co-star, and he was unstoppable. Nobody. He dribbled the ball up the floor. He dribbled it to death, but he nearly dribbled Golden State to death.
Right.
Because he had them in a hole. They're up 2-1 with game 4 in his house.
Mm-hmm.
And then it reversed from there on. Iguodala get it inserted in the starting lineup.
Right.
And he started guarding LeBron, and you know the rest of the story. He became the MVP of the series. But tomorrow night, if he's still, quote-unquote, GOAT James, the best player on the planet, he should rise above this game. Jay Crowder cannot guard him. Even Ayton cannot keep LeBron James from getting to the rim. He's still the greatest driver of the basketball I've ever seen. So right now, the stage is set for him to have one of those epic games. What's the big one? Game 6 of 2012, right?
Yeah.
2012 at Boston. It was sensational. That was coming off his disappearance in the finals of 2011. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of the reporters, I know even Chris was a little skeptical, like, wow, You better do it this time, and he did it.
Yeah.
Well, now you better do it this time, and I believe he will, because I believe he's played almost 40 more playoff games than the entire Phoenix roster. So you can write that off as he's just getting old, or you can chalk it up as he's just too experienced.
I'm giving Ben McLemore. How about give Ben McLemore? He's the only guy that could really make the three. So I'm going to let Ben McLemore play. I know he's not a skip defender, but you need some guys that can make some shots when they collapse down on LeBron. Go ahead, Chris.
That's absolutely right. Like, you look at those Cleveland teams, whether it's 2015, 2018, remember when they played Golden State in the finals and he had the 51 points in game one and all that? He was surrounded by shooters. And the Lakers aren't great shooters. They can get hot. They can be streaky. And they're going to have to be hot. Because, I like I said, LeBron's got to dominate the ball. They got to probably play slow, run opportunistically, but play slow for the most part, rely on their defense. I think he can get Andre Drummond going, you know, get him some buckets at the basket in the high pick and roll or in the pick and roll, and then have the shooters. They're going to have to hit shots. Shannon, I don't know that LeBron has to take 35 shots. I mean, that's just not LeBron for the most part.
No, it's not.
Anyway, but he has to get probably every game now without AD, he's got to be over 30 points.
Yeah.
And really between 30 and 40 points, if not more, at least a game or two.
And damn near triple-double.
But he's going to have some help.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to have some help. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They're going to have to hit three-pointers.
He's got to get to the free throw line. He needs to take 20 free throws and make 15 of them.
They don't call him anymore for LeBron.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't. You see Jay Crowder when he went to up and under. That was a five. That should have been an AM one when he went up and under on the other night. You saw that.
Hey, the refs will get the memo tomorrow night. They need the Lakers.
I don't want nobody rough. Scott Foster, Mark Davis, Kane Fitzgerald, Tony Brothers, Bill Kennedy, all of them because of Bulljive. Leon Woods, all of them. I know all of y'all.
So they want LeBron.
And Malloy, you too.
They want LeBron out of the playoffs. That's
I don't know what
saying.
They want. I want some fouls called.
I want to see epic, and I think he's highly capable of going epic. Jay Crowder is afraid of LeBron James. You know it, and I know
Jason Taylor. Jason Taylor has shot 400 free throws in four games.
He has.
LeBron shot like 15.
Well, maybe he should attack.
I think he'll get a good whistle tomorrow.
That's what we need.
Okay.
He'll get a fair whistle tomorrow.
Well, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Chris, we're going to have you stick around because we got to talk Clippers taking control over Dallas. Yes, that is the latest.
No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Tomorrow, it's an AL Central showdown on FS1. Tim Anderson leads the White Sox against Jose Ramirez and the Indians. Tomorrow at 5:30 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. The Clippers came to Dallas trailing 2-0 and now head back to L.A. with the series tied and home court advantage reclaimed. Kawhi led the way with a game-high 29 points, and the Clippers seem to have cracked Dallas's code after they held the Mavs to a season low in points. Luka Doncic, who's dealing with a nerve issue in his neck, said he was terrible in the loss, finishing with 19 points and going 1 of 7 from three and missing all 5 of his free throw attempts. Not good. Chris, how much was Luka to blame for the game 3 and 4 losses?
Well, game 3, none. I mean, 44 points, 9 assists, 9 rebounds. He jumps on the Clippers early like he's ready to end the series. Because obviously if they win 3-0, this thing is over. And he has 11 points early in like the first 6 minutes. Rick Carlisle takes him out. They're up 28-11. In 3 minutes that Luka's on the bench, the Clippers go on a 14-4 run. They pull within 7. And it's a game the rest of the way. And then in the fourth quarter, Luka's got 10 points. 2 assists. He scored more points than the rest of the Dallas starters put together. His wingmen, Kristaps Porzingis and Tim Hardaway Jr., go 0-for-5 in the fourth quarter. So now, granted, he was 2-for-6 from the free throw line. And Skip, I'll give you this. He's a horrific free throw shooter. Like, all of a sudden, I mean, he used to be just mediocre at, what, 70%?
Yeah, it was 70%.
He's become terrible in these playoffs. He makes LeBron look like Steph Curry at the foul line. All right, so I'll give you that. But game three, I can't criticize him for that. Game four obviously didn't play well. We know he's got the neck injury. To his credit, he didn't blame it. So I'm not going to use it as an excuse. You got to play. If you're playing, you're playing. He has 19 and 6, whatever it was, 9 for 24 from the field. So he struggled. But here's the thing. They're not supposed to beat the Clippers. I have a hard time being critical of Luka in this series. They're 2-2 with the team that many people think has the best roster in basketball. You look at the roster, his wingman is Kristaps Porzingis. He doesn't have Paul George as his wingman like Kawhi Leonard does. He doesn't have a playoff Rondo. He does not have the – they're not supposed to beat the Clippers. So the fact that he's got them tied and a chance to win at 22 years old, it's hard for me to kill him. At 22, Larry Bird was struggling in the NCAA title game against Magic Johnson and Michigan State. At 22, Michael Jordan was leading the Bulls to a 40-42 record and the 8th seed in the East. At 22, Magic was winning titles, but because he had Kareem. He went to the team with the MVP. And only LeBron has done more because he took out that Detroit Pistons team at 22 years old in the Eastern Conference Finals and play San Antonio in the finals. But other than that, I mean, who's done more than this kid at 22 years old? So I get it. His free throw shooting's pathetic. He was bad yesterday. And, you know, they're in a series now. But I can't heap too much blame on him because they wouldn't even be close. This series would be over if it wasn't for the heroics that he's already put on in games 1, 2, and 3.
I agree with you. I mean, the first three games, the only thing Luka could do in game three is shoot free throws better. And I don't know how a guy has the same. He's 7-13 from the three-point line Friday night. He's 7-13 from the free throw line on Friday night. I've never seen anything like it. I tweeted out he should maybe shoot his free throws from the three-point line and maybe have a higher percentage, Chris, because I've never seen anything like it. And I agree with you. You go 44-9-9. And you got two other guys. All he needed was one other guy. Skip, you remember game 1 and 2? Hardaway Jr. came along with him. Finney Smith, especially in game 1, came along. Porzingis hit some big shots.
Kleba came along.
All he needed was one other guy in game 3 to come along with him for a great ride, and they could have won this game because he would have had enough to offset what Kawhi and Paul George was doing. But what he didn't have that, and so they overshadowed. They got, what, 64, 65? To his 44. But Hardaway last night, 1 for 8, 4 points. Finney Smith, 8 points. Like I said, I think they made a trade. The Clippers traded for Finney Smith between game 2 and 3 because he's been terrible since. The difference in this series is simple as this, and Ty Lue hit it. The shots that we're missing, we normally make. The shots that they're making, Skip, they normally miss. Well, they reverted back. They became who they were the entire season from the three-point line, and they got blown out. And so in order for them to win this series, Luka has to be otherworldly, and they got to knock down 50, 60% of their threes. If not, they're going to lose because the Clippers clearly have the better team.
It is now my turn. I'm going to say this one more time on this show. It is utter blasphemy from my partner, Shannon Sharp, to call Luka Doncic Baby Bird.
Oh, Baby Bird, yeah.
We are all going to get struck by lightning if you continue to do this, because it looked like Luka got struck by lightning at the free throw line.
Yeah, he bad.
You were disqualified just at the free throw line. He is now 13 of 32 over the four games at the free throw line. That's 40.6%. It's so bad that he's clanking bad.
Yeah.
It's not even coming close anymore.
Yeah, they're not spitting. Now, they're hitting the back iron, Chris.
Larry Bird shot 89% for his career in the regular season and for his career in the playoffs. And 4 times, Larry Bird led the NBA in regular season free throw shooting. 4 times. This is beyond pathetic. Now, let me get to the other reason that Luka should be blamed. He's only 22, and you're giving him a pass because he's 22. Well, somebody should pull him aside and sit him down and say, wipe the smile off your face. When you're front running, when you're showboating and you got it going from three, which is unusual because you're a 33% career free three-point shooter. When that's happening and the ball's going down, quit giggling, quit chuckling, quit tee-heeing at the Clippers. Quit screaming out, not in my house. He's too small. He can't guard me. It's just outrageous. And finally, the Clippers do have some toughness. It was lost in games one and two. But we're talking about a Marcus Morris and a Kawhi Leonard and even a Paul George. They've been around the block a couple of times in this league. They know how it is done in the end. And they reached down in game three and finally said, we are sick and tired of all your gloating and all of your trash talking, and watch this. And they started to get up into Luka. Mm-hmm. It took eight of them. They tried eight different players on Luka in one game on Friday night. And again, he wound up with 44 points, but they started to beat him down and wear him down until finally, all of a sudden, when it was clear, and he's got high IQ, he knew all of a sudden the game had slipped away. And what does he go slip on the bench? Some sort of a heating sleeve to say, oh, I got a neck injury. Baloney, stop it. I don't want to hear about it. It came right on time just as the series was starting to slip away. I am not buying it. And Chris, I told Shannon earlier, in the history of the NBA, no team has ever made 23s in a home playoff game and lost that game. And that's what the Clippers pulled off on Friday night, down 30-11 with 4:28 left in the first quarter. From that moment until this moment, they have outscored in Dallas the Mavericks before crazed sellout post-pandemic crowds. They have outscored them by 54 points. Maybe they finally just got mad and they started locking down on defense because Dallas has not been able to score over the last seven quarters.
Well, you said it, Skip. We're home. We make 23s.
You have to win.
What are we going now, Chris? We can't shoot any better. We shoot 51% from the three-point line.
And remember, they finished 18th in three-point shooting.
You make 23s, normally, more times than not, you're going to win that ball game. But when you allow Kawhi Leonard to miss three shots, you allow Paul George to miss four shots, and they get almost 70 points between the two, you're probably going to lose. Because that's what happened. Kawhi at one point was 10 of 10 or 11 of 11. Paul George was 10 of 10. They couldn't miss.
And by the way, a lot of them were point blank because they're just putting their heads down and saying, you can't keep us from the rim.
Chris, I told Skip earlier, I understand that Rick Carlisle has a substitution pattern. And normally at about 7 minutes to go in the half, the first quarter, he would sub Luka out. But I believe he should have went for the death blow. I believe, Luka, we're going to run it till the first quarter's over. We're going to try to make this 19-point lead, get it a 30-point lead, and I'll give you an extra couple of minutes in the second quarter. But let's see if we can push this thing out past 30. And if we can do that, I like our chances. Because once they weathered the storm, they're like, hold on, wait a minute. We had to have, we only down 4 points. Oh, we right back in this thing now. It was a whole different ball game.
Yeah, I agree, Shannon. And what we're seeing, look, early in the series, they couldn't guard Luka and the Mavericks. Now the Mavericks can't guard them. Kawhi's been spectacular offensively. Skip, the one thing I'll say, I do not want Luka to lose his swag. I'm here for all of it. Steph does it. Trae Young does it. LeBron, they all do it. Mm-hmm. I can't take that swag. Heck, Larry Bird was the biggest trash talker in NBA history.
I know, but he didn't laugh at the other team. He didn't laugh after he made a shot.
Nah, I don't care whether it's the, some of them got the shimmy, some of them got the laugh. LeBron's doing this. Whatever your thing is, I like the swag. And Luka's got it. Don't take that away from him.
Oh, but here's
Don't take that away from him.
Well, the Clippers just wiped that grin right off his face.
He keep talking about Larry Bird. John Stockton told a story. He said Larry Bird walked by his bench right before the tip-off and said, boys, I feel like 43 tonight. He dropped 43 in three quarters. He told the Portland Trailblazers, he said, I ain't doing nothing but shooting with left hand because I'm going to save the right one for the Lakers because we got them after we play y'all. Drop 47, shoot left-handed. How's that for swag?
Did he laugh at them while he was doing it? No, he did not.
Skip, what man tells you a right-handed player, say, I'm only going to play with my left hand because I'm saving the right one for somebody else?
I got one other Larry Bird story I cannot tell on television, but you are correct. But in the end, Chris, you said Thursday and Friday, you said Luka Doncic has been the best player on the floor and will continue to be. And I think Kawhi just proved him wrong. Kawhi's making 63% of his shots and 48% of his threes.
Well, you shoot like that, what you going to do?
Kawhi's been criticized. You know, I think all of us and others have criticized him. We want to see more. I give him credit. And the whole Clippers team, they've showed a mental toughness that I honestly didn't think they had. After seeing them in the bubble last year, after losing the first two games this year to Dallas, maybe this will be a watershed moment for them. I don't think the series is over.
I agree.
Rick Carlisle is a very good coach.
I agree.
He's going to adjust to what Ty Lue did, right? When Ty Lue went small, that's a big adjustment.
Yep.
Rick will adjust to that. So it's not over, but if the Clippers get through this and win a series where they were down 0-2 going on the road, maybe it'll be a watershed moment mentally for them, and, you know, we'll see what they do going forward.
All I know is Luka will be just fine on Wednesday night. Watch.
Mm. Well, I hope so. I mean, 2 days off, it did miracles for Chris Paul, so let's see if it has the same effect for Luka, Chris.
No mercy.
Boston fans showered Kyrie Irving with boos and language all game long yesterday. But as the Nets were leaving the court after their win, a fan threw a water bottle that nearly hit Kyrie. That fan was arrested on assault and battery charges and also received a lifetime ban from TD Garden. And when talking about the incident, Kyrie called it, quote, underlying racism and being treated like you're in a zoo. Chris Broussard still with us this morning. Chris, what was your reaction to the incident and what happened with the fans of Boston?
Well, first, I don't think Kyrie stomping on midcourt should even be in the discussion. I mean, people can take it as an insult, whatever, but he stepped on the leprechaun at midcourt. Now, I don't know if that sparked the fan or not, but the bottom line is that leprechaun, that's a photo. That's a logo. That's a cartoon. That does not in any way justify throwing a water bottle at a human being. That thing could have hit Kyrie in the eye, maybe cut his eye, and then he's out for the series or something like that. It turns the whole season for Brooklyn. So I saw some media members throwing that. Well, but Kyrie did this, and that shouldn't even be a part of this discussion. I don't like to say everything is racial. Obviously, we got the history of this country and we have the current situation where it's very racially charged right now. But one formerly high ranking official in the NBA, he's no longer with the league. I'm not going to say his name, but he had a lot to do with the success and direction of the league. He told me this back when the Donald Sterling thing was going on. He said, and he was no longer with the league at that point. He said, everything's about race. He said it's always about race when talking about the NBA. And I think he was talking about just maneuvering having a league that is 75 to 80% African American and a fan base that is, you know, especially those going to games, is overwhelmingly white. And so he said everything has to do with race when it comes to this league. And so you look at these incidents, what we have, guys, four in the last few days.
Yep.
And the one that we didn't talk about, we had Trae Young, we had Russell Westbrook, white fans, black players, and then the one with Ja Morant's dad in Salt Lake City that came out over the weekend, T. Morant, where a fan in Salt Lake City said, I'll put a quarter in your back and make you dance for me, boy. Obviously racial. Now, to some of the fans' credit, in Salt Lake City, they did step to the fan. And I don't want to paint all of the white fans with any broad stroke. Not even most of them necessarily. But I do think some of the white fans resent these black players dominating football and basketball. And I think, look, they love sports, so they can't just walk away from football and basketball and not pay attention. So they have to accept these black athletes. And the guy that threw the water bottle at Kyrie actually had on a Kevin Garnett jersey. Okay, so, but I think there's some resentment there. And then in these racially charged times, when they see these black athletes speaking out against racism, against police brutality, and things like that, I think that heightens the resentment. And I think there's a feeling of, man, you making millions of dollars. You making way more money than I'll ever make. What are you talking about racism? And I think that brings the resentment to a head. And so, again, I'm not exactly sure, of course, if this had anything to do with race, with this guy throwing the bottle. But that's a feeling. Okay, Kyrie voiced it. A lot of players feel that way. People in the league understand that dynamic. And so I think that is something that is at play, especially in the moment we're at now, where, you know, race, we're in a racially charged time in our country.
Chris, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think the longest time, white America has pacified a lot of blacks by paying them more, and blacks have remained silent. But that's not, that's a thing of the past. You can no longer pay blacks enough money to keep them silent on issues like this, Skip. It started with Jackie Robinson. It started with Muhammad Ali, was really, because he was willing to risk his entire career to say, no, I'm not doing it. But you're making all this money, bro. No, I'm not going to do it. And for the longest time, and see, sometimes they think, and you see that, I see this a lot. Man, you give me X amount of dollars, you can say whatever, you can do whatever. And a lot of them subscribe to that theory. I should be able to call you whatever. I should be able to do whatever I want to you. You make $30, $40 million. I make little chicken feed. So I should be able to, it's like you go to a restaurant. Well, I pay your service. I will leave you a tip. So if you get my order wrong, I should be able to yell. I should be able to scream, no. Or if you're in retail, the customer is always right. Bull jive, the customer is wrong. And then don't be afraid to tell the customer he's wrong. Well, in this situation, fans, you're wrong. You don't pay enough money. There's no amount of money that you can pay that you should be allowed to come to a ball game and think you can say and do whatever you want to a player because you don't like his team, you don't like something he said, or he's beating your team. That is the problem, is that you feel because you pay. Because what do you hear all the time? I pay your salary. But I that used to, ooh, now you talking about madder than a hornet. When they, oh, I pay your salary. Stop. Stop this, fans. This is ridiculous. These are human beings. Everybody is a human being. And everybody, oh, you should be able to withstand that. Bro, that's not what I signed up for. I didn't sign up to get popcorn, somebody spit at me, or throw water bottles at me. I understand everything that I came, that came with the NFL, Skip. Possible concussions, we didn't know about a lot about it. But I was willing to accept a broken bone, a torn ligament, because I understand it's called assumption of the risk. Mm-hmm. I knew that I was going to risk bodily injury playing that game. But fans, basketball, having all that, nah, I didn't sign up for that. Mm. We need to stop this and stop making excuses. It doesn't give you the right to do what you're doing because you're upset or you dislike a person because of what they said.
Okay, so let's go back to the kid who threw the water bottle. I have no idea what possessed him. I don't know what his deepest, darkest motivation was.
Kyrie dropping 39.
Maybe. But I do agree with what Chris's source told him. Race is always lurking just under the surface.
It is.
It's always operating subliminally in sports, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I just accept it and try to deal with it and try to get it out in the middle of this table so we can examine it. And I agree with what Chris said. We can't try to connect the dots between Steve Nash allowing his starters, his big three, to play all the way to the bitter end of a blowout and then Kyrie stomping or stepping on the face of the leprechaun logo to this. All I know is, as soon as I saw it, I said, this wasn't just popcorn being dropped on a man's head,
right.
Russell Westbrook. That this was a thrown water bottle from, I don't know, 60, 70 feet away.
He was way up there, Skip.
And it looked full.
It had to be to get down there, Skip. You know an empty water bottle is not going to travel
gonna
that
float.
Far.
Right. They're going to float. So it looked like it had not been drunk yet.
Right.
And speaking of drunk, I don't know what he had had, okay? But he throws it. And it came close to Kyrie's face or head to the point I immediately said, you have to press charges and you have to prosecute to the full extent of the law because that was attempted assault. The others, the spitting incident, it's the most disrespectful act from man to man you can perpetrate on somebody. But this was attempted assault. I don't know if you could argue that popcorn on a head was an attempted assault, but that was. That was a dangerous act by a kid who just lost it. So he needs to be prosecuted. I don't know how old he is. He looked like in his 20s, maybe. Prosecute. You said it's probably up to Kyrie. Press charges. And he seems, Kyrie seems capable of pressing charges. Okay, now let's do that. That was the rotten apple to the orange that was playing the starters to the bitter end. And then the stomp on the logo. So Chris, let's go all the way back and treat it as an orange to the rotten apple. I still thought it was unnecessary on Kyrie's part because he ended badly in Boston. Just let that be. You said March 2018, hey, if you all have me at a fan night, if you all have me, I'll resign here. And then it just fell completely apart. It crashed and it burned. And he wanted out and they wanted him out. So leave it be. Let it go because enough was enough. And yet, just for perspective, you can't stomp on the logo of an organization that was the first in the NBA to draft a black player in 1950, the first to have a black head coach, the great Bill Russell in 68 and 69. He was a player coach. And the first in 1965 to have an all-black starting five. Their legacy, their history is above that. You don't need to go step on the logo. So that was just that's just beneath his dignity and beneath theirs. But then, to Chris's point, now we get back to, does race play a factor in this? Very possibly it did.
But Chris, the fans have acted like this since sports became segregated. There was no reason for fans to treat Jackie Robinson the way they did, other than what? That made it seem like he was a bum. The guy did win World Series. He did win an MVP. So what was the reason? They're like, you got the Negro League. Why do you need to come to us? You got HBCUs. Why do you need to come to us? You got your own school. Why do you need to come to us? So what was that reason? I need someone to tell me a reason why whites had hated black athletes for other than their skin color. Because they were better? Because they could jump high, run faster, hit the ball, throw just as good, could do all the things you could do, if not better?
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes.
Yes. Yes. That's it. And so for the longest time, what did they say? It's just like you go back and say, well, that's the way we used to play back then. We could clothesline and we could do all that stuff. So it was tolerated. The NFL cleaned it up, said, we're going to throw a 15-yard penalty. We'll find you. We'll do other things. And if you keep doing it, we'll suspend you. But what is the Well, that's a part of it. That's what you make the big bucks for. No, hell no. You don't pay me that to let somebody disrespect me, to throw water bottles, throw dump beer on me and all kind of things. No, that's not what I signed up for. I can take all that. I can understand my hips, my knees might be bad, my back might have to have 10 different surgeries. But I did not sign up for someone to throw things at me or to be disrespectful or to use racial slurs at me. That's not what I signed up for. No professional athlete will tell you that's what they signed up for.
Well, look, we've talked about how this generation of athletes is different, you know, with all the activism they've done. And we've heard, I don't know if you guys were watching Inside the NBA last night after the games, Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal didn't really bring up race with this. They were like, let's just move on. And they talked about how they had been, you know, spit on and you know, had things thrown at them. I don't know if they said spit, but had things thrown at them when they were playing. And, you know, fans are always going to do it, move on. We saw Derrick Rose say, remember Rose's comment that, you know, that's part, but early in the Knicks series, that's part of the game. I've had family members with beer poured on them and all that stuff. The thing is, this generation of athletes, and I give them credit for this, they're not standing for it. They're not taking it. They're speaking up and saying, no, you're not going to treat us like that. You can boo, you can jeer, you can insult us in other ways and all that stuff. We get it. It's a part of the game. You're a fan. But we will not be disrespected as human beings like you have gotten away with, and not just black athletes, but athletes in general in the past fans have done that. And so I applaud these younger athletes for stepping up and saying, no, we're not taking it. Westbrook, like, no, I'm not taking it. You're not doing it. And they're putting the pressure on the league to come down harder on these fans, which obviously they're doing.
But they better do something or they're going to have another Malice in the Palace on their hand. Because eventually, Skip, you're going to catch a guy's going to have a bad day. And he's going, like, you know what? I'm having a bad day. I had a bad game. And some fan is going to yell something or some fan is going to do something, reach out and touch him, and it's going to be, oh, okay, uh-oh, I'm sorry, my bad, and it's too late. Because he's going to haul off and boom. And then the NBA going to want to take all his money, and they're going to say, no, you had an opportunity to do something about this, and you didn't stop it when you had an opportunity to.
And I'm going to have mixed emotions about not wanting to criticize that player for going up in the stands.
Exactly, exactly.
Yes.
It continues to build in a lot of ways. Chris, we appreciate you weighing in on this. Thanks for your insight.
No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.